We haven't had a chat in a while.
We totally did not. I think the last chat was like 6 months ago.
I kind of remember it because I was at a music studio. Can't quite remember immediately which one. I went to a record hall or a recording studio and had a session with you.
I remember
talking about like AI and XML, but did we even release that one ever?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that was quite a while ago, and I feel like our lives and the world has changed so much since.
I think we didn't record any podcast episode because we were so busy vibe coding different projects and products that this kind of got sidelined for a moment there. I've been thinking actually to do some like low episode. I didn't have time or energy to do it, but here we are.
We're back.
We're back. Welcome to Design Party, your one-stop shop for everything
design related.
But actually, it's not. It's not anymore.
I came to this realization that by the end of this year, I'm not going to be referring to myself primarily as a designer.
That's probably smart because you're a product maker.
And I feel like I'm so blessed now to be working with like brought in different types of businesses and then sitting down with them and looking at ancient systems and then creating new systems that end-to-end help streamline processes and remove so much dead weight from people's day-to-day lives that they don't have to have meetings and generate reports because that whole process has now been automated and they evaluate and they act on that information. And it excites me so much because it's such a beautiful intersection of service design with like ethnography, going on site to see what are they using, how do they do the things, and then with them create the user journey maps, identifying the things and visually selecting what we do, and then creating prototypes so damn fast. And the tools have become so good that very often I find myself going from user journeys to prototype. The thought of it'll be the first iteration and then we'll go from there. But if you give it enough context and direction of what you want the outcome to be, I'm all the time amazed of how far along it gets. And of course, edge cases and non-happy paths, these things.
I love when it handles that for me and I don't have to think about it.
But I feel like that's where it struggles so often, that kind of it can help me realize the goal, but then even small things like back suddenly erasing all progress instead of having proper states between the steps and stuff. So many places where it's so blind that now it's really about creating the context and giving yourself time to evaluate what it creates. Because you can spend a lot of time designing and creating something really great, but then it falls apart. You still need to do all that other stuff. So I find that it's almost, of course, assuming you're using a good design system and some sort of a methodology, even ShadCN, but having some sort of like reasonable starting place for the UI work and the prototyping, you can quickly convert, once you have it working well, into something visually nice. Mm-hmm. Refactoring is now such a joke of fast you can do things.
It is. Today I was refactoring the whole day, basically at my work. I am making for the first time ever really sophisticated professional design system. So I first started with creating my own version of Figma MCP bridge, because the one that comes with Figma is really a toy. I don't know, on the verge of being not really usable. So I created this bridge that works for me the best, and I managed to polish it to the point where it's so fast that it designs for me. So I created a file, which is basically a library because it's published with all the tokens and also semantic names and all of that. Then I said, write me JSON with all of that so I can use it in React Native App. And then in another Cloud Code, I was like, here is this JSON. Please, can you import it to Storybook and use it for all the components and use semantic variables don't use primitives for anything. And also now scan the whole code base and apply the same thing for everything that's not a component for whatever reason. It was just, you know, it's a joke, really. One of my bosses says that code is now manifesting itself. I think that manifesting is absolutely like amazing word for what's happening right now. And now we have a problem where I'm faster making stuff in React Native than in Figma is becoming a bottleneck. And yes, I will shit on Figma.
Some things never change.
No, that will never change. I don't think Figma has a bright future, but more on that in a minute. Basically, now I need to say to my Cloud Code, check the code base, but now we have everything nicely tied with design system. Check it out and design me in Figma. And it does it. And it's actually good. And basically for every action it does, I have a little counter in the plugin UI. I think today it made a pass with all the up-to-date and finally correct variables. It was like 1,500. This is the equivalent of minimal clicks I would need to do to repair everything. That's insane. And you could see like how numbers rocketed like from zero to that number in 3 seconds. Imagine clicking with your finger. This is such a mundane and stupid job. It should not be a part of anybody's job. Anywho, it works. Super happy. I'm not happy that I need to use Figma. It makes me slower. It doesn't add to my work almost anything. I actually, yesterday, I think, quickly checked pencil.dev. They released some new update. And I always check when they have something massive to see where they are. Oh God, it's so good. I literally said, can you make me a proposal of, I don't know, 6 different styles of a button? And it did. And it was great. I'm like, okay, I like style 1. Now create me all the variants, blah, blah. It did. It was brilliant. And I said, okay, based off this design, how about some inputs? Amazing. It looked absolutely amazing. And then one shooting to React Native, whatever framework, is a matter of one prompt, probably. One good prompt. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, I was thinking to myself that I think you're 2 weeks away from forking your own pen pot to make your own.
I was considering, but I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at home, I don't use Figma. I had one person, probably a bot, messaging me on LinkedIn the other day. Oh, cool product. Yada. How do you use Figma in your designing? And I said, I don't use Figma. And then I don't remember what was the follow-up question, but it is very curious that a lot of people, a lot of designers are still using AI at the level of asking questions from ChatGPT.
That's the thing that has blown my mind, that I've come to the realization that these levels that existed previously are not going away, and some of them might even grow. Do you think we are selling more or less Photoshop UI component kits today than 10 years ago?
What? Yeah.
It might very well be that it's actually less, but that market is still there. And it's not like it's a huge gold mine or anything, but I feel like there will always be a place for Canva. There will always be a place for Figma. But I feel like it's now found it more realistic that the frontier solutions and tools will be about touching code. There's a better chance that we will create a Figma-like experience building these vibe-coded solutions and tools than there is for Figma to catch up and completely change itself to work with that type of a standard. And it's, if you just think about it in first principle, there's no way that that won't be the ultimate realization, because we're already quite close. And things like pencil, like paper, like Theo Brown, who I listen to every now and then, and I know that you do too, he talks about how the future of business will be open source. That kind of, because of all of these vibe coding solutions and whatnot, we want to be able to touch and modify these tools that we use. And because of all of this vibe coding, the huge big companies are churning out slop. And a lot of our favorite tools are getting worse, not better. But you can paint a pretty picture that look at all these features we now have just shipped, but when you try to use them, they actually fail in real world use. And it feels like no one's doing that due diligence that I was talking about previously of actually sitting down and testing it before you mm-hmm. put it out there, which is not a given thing. And I think in evals and actual ensuring that it works as you intended to is the hardest problem that I think more people should hopefully put time into to help automate a lot of that to be better than how it is now. But to your point, I think we all want to tinker and we want to have faith and trust in the tools that we're using. And Theo's this is that worse this gets, the more that's going to be required by the professionals to take it into their use. And the moat has to be elsewhere. It has to come from the expertise and the knowledge, not just from we made a tool, because now everyone can make a tool, but it's also means it's easier than ever to break good tools and to make bad tools that seem great. And I think that there's a distinction between people who will be willing to suffer Canva's shortcomings because it still helps them be faster in 80% of the things that they do, but then it makes them feel not able to do something. And it's if you're trying to do it with Canva, but it's kind of like using Microsoft Excel as an art. There are some people who do that. And there's even this one Japanese gentleman who's very successful with it, but it doesn't mean that's what you should do.
Yeah. I was also thinking about the employment and future for all of us. At first, for a couple of years, we were all a bit worried that AI is going to replace us. Oh, and now, after many, many different shifts happen in past, let's say even 6 months, I think that two things might happen, one or the other, maybe both, I'm not sure. So one is those people who refuse to use AI or have some reason not to use it or don't put any time to actually learn it and become very crafty with it will with time be phased out, because why would you hire somebody who still does everything 1,500 clicks? Why would I pay a designer that would for a week do this is a busy work. I don't want that as a owner, for example. They will be phased out slowly but surely. Or if the mess is so vast, we are in this status quo, I think actually shifts. But then those high performers as you and me, they're in AI all day long, all night long. You have been sending me messages at one.
Guilty as charged.
I've been awake, but I was if I start talking with you not right now, my melatonin will never kick in. I'm in bed. those people might get awarded with much higher salary instead. So maybe you can still have like this big mass of people who are, you know, just working, not innovating, mold.
But that's the thing, like in the current job market, I'm sure it'll change, but I'm also not 100% convinced it will, that there's 3.2 jobs for every AI expert. Like the amount of money that is out there for people such as me and you is insane. But because we see the potential, because we want to realize our own dreams with it, like those jobs are going to remain vacant.
Could be.
And I think that more and more people will, because I do think that a lot of senior people have too much hangups and too much calcification in their worldviews to really jump at what an incredible opportunity they would have if they really took the time to look at these tools. I think that it might be that in the future, it's more like consulting organizations and whatnot, creating that capability until it becomes native. I think mobile, I saw that happen, young enough, old enough to be in that situation of being how when I was working at Konomio, which was my first tea consultancy, they got to work with huge brands like New York Times and Bloomberg, and here in Finland, like the Finnish Financial Times, Kauppalehti, and MTV Media, and all of these. But over time, that became an in-house function because it became the standard. And I feel that right now we're in this kind of mutative position where a lot of companies, first of all, are using AI as an excuse to fire people to pad their own pockets.
Yeah, that's one thing.
That's definitely
one. Let's not blame AI for somebody being greedy and wanting to do some other stuff. It's not AI. They would find some other reason to do that.
Because also for most companies that try to implement AI, they don't succeed. Even OpenAI and Anthropic, now 1 in 5 employees there are for customer success. Like it really takes a lot of training, not only to set up these systems, but make sure that people can use them in the intended ways.
Correct, like, yeah.
It's a very difficult thing to copy paste, even if you have the best, you know, in some ways OpenAI and Anthropic are two companies that represent a whole another way of running a business. Like these guys are shipping 70 times in 50 days. It's insane. Of course, like in many ways, we can see it also in some of the quality things, but the scale of operations that they're engaging in is insane. I do think that right now it's like a great opportunity to get into AI. Already now, it's not as good of a time as at the turn of the year. And I've been posting about this on LinkedIn that like the age of free AI is over. Everyone is tightening the grips because most companies last year who tried to implement AI, over 90% of them failed in their objective. Companies that have actually reaped the rewards. Some examples are, for example, Klarna, which also did a misstep. They were so ahead that they optimized for the wrong thing. They were optimizing for efficiency, and that made a lot of customers angry. But now they refocused it, and still over 80% of their customer support is done by AI, but now it's optimized for quality and retention and lifetime value optimization, not for speedy closing of tickets.
I think we also need to mention Duolingo here as a example of massive flop in AI implementation. I don't know if
especially compared to...
yeah, because when all these changes started to happen, they immediately fired independent like contractors who were curating
ensuring
their
quality
and making their content for like every language. It was man-made. And then they had to shut down their social account, lost a lot of stock value. It went really bad for them. Now that we're talking about a language app.
Well, before we pivot, I just wanted to bring this just on the fact that like these companies are attempting. Few have gotten it, but those who have, you know, we're talking 40x, 80x performance figures. And the sad thing is that these companies that are jumping the gun and trying to think about just the next quarterly report, they're actually shooting themselves in the foot because, again, context and curation and expertise are the moats of the future, and these people are getting rid of them. But what are those people going to do? I think a portion of them will create endeavors. Think about it like this, first principles. If you have a calcified company, the traditional company that ships every quarter, maybe every half a year, or maybe even annually, and they're moving with traditional methods, and they have a huge customer base, then you have an up-and-coming, fast-moving startup that ships weekly and has a very laser-like focus. How much of the older company's client share can they comfortably eat without the other company even noticing anything's awry? You know, if you have 1 million users paying you and you lose 2%, you might not feel it that much, but that's significant for the other company.
Yeah.
That's enough to have $1 million valuations. And so they will catch up. And so I think that some companies will do the transition either in-house by paying a big bill or those using consultancies and not paying so much, but not reaping as big of rewards from it. And then there will be those that will bought up or become irrelevant.
I'm curious what will happen with like all these monoliths, like, for example, Atlassian. Everybody knows their products are junk. They exist because every company around the block had to have some tools to connect their people via documentation or tickets. They basically have a ecosystem lock-in strategy. It's very hard to pull out of it.
And all the world's connectors, customizations.
Exactly. Yeah. Once they creep up into your infrastructure, it's really hard to take them out because they are connected to GitHub, to Slack, to this. That. If you just yank it out, all of a sudden, the castle of cards will just like fall down. That doesn't work. If you want to do it, like, usually that's a whole project. You need to create the task force, people from their regular work to like get it. It's expensive to take one company out of your pocket, in your money. For example, as a response to that, we have Linear. But Linear is also now like, but do you really need this tool? If we need ticketing system, I mean, this is like silly example, but for a small startup, sure, the free account. But if you're like growing a little bit and you need to start paying a little bit serious invoices to all these tools, you can vibe code your own solution. It's even not that hard. What happens with this legacy monolith? Just it feels recently that Atlassian introduced in Confluence like live document, which is basically Google Docs.
Yeah, we use that at Vandal, Confluence. It's been around for a while.
They released live. Something that Google had for, it feels, 100 years. I'm shocked. What? I don't understand. And they're still operating. But with time, I don't know what will happen. Maybe people will realize paying a ton of money to them, like, I could relocate 1% of that money and vibe code it in a week, and that's it.
But I mean, there is a difference between having something that works for yourself and then something that works in an enterprise environment. A lot of product development is not, like, of course, the foundation has to be solid. But then after that, it's like, okay, what do we do? We've been testing this with 20 projects. What happens when there's 2,000? We've been testing with this 5-user team. What happens when there's 200 concurrent connectors? A lot of this hardening and scaling work. And of course, that raises all kinds of issues that you had the luxury to not have to tackle when it was smaller. But yeah. I do think that Linear came out with the article and said that issue tracking is dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's really smart, really trying to go to where the puck is going. And I do think that it's interesting, agentic orchestration, agentic workflows, creating the company harness, basically, that allows AI to operate meaningfully and reliably inside of a corporate setting. And not screw things up, anti-open claw in a way. But I think that there's a lot of interest and obvious value there. And I think that Linear is like, all right, we want to be the orchestrate central place that you dump your knowledge here. The CEO, Kari Salminen, he had a good video where he was talking about his resistance to wanting to create wiki-like functionality, the confluence inside mm-hmm. of Linear. But they've kind of been forced to. We have documents, but they're not... first were just in project level. Now you can have them in tickets, but there's still no central place where you can see them all. And he's kind of saying, this is a philosophical decision. We don't want to create a knowledge graph. We want you to be able to create documents that are relevant to getting the thing done inside that ticket. But then when it's done, put away and don't look at it. Don't create this burden of, you know, knowledge structures that might become irrelevant that you have to maintain even though no one's even looking at it. And I think will be space for a lot of opinions in the future, because I do think that we're going to have more developers, not less. And I think that, like, the term vibe coding, it's kind of accurate, but in a sense, it lumps in a lot of things into one title. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if in a year or two, we have kind of like different categories. Because vibe coding, if you're not even, you don't even know what Git is, you know, and you're...
you're Vibe Coder tier 5, and I'm Vibe Coder tier 2. You're bronze.
If you're an actual stack developer for 15 years and now you're using Cursor and Claude Code, then you also vibe code, or does the limit go?
You can't lump everything into the same term. It's not the same. For example, you still have people who will say, AI, crap, I will never use it in my coding. I created an app that is a proof that, yeah, you can totally do it on your own. External help to code it, to review, nothing. You think the most about vocab from my friends and people who talk with me about AI and stuff. You tried, you use the tool.
It's really good.
It's made by one person who is a mediocre developer.
Mm.
At best, mediocre. I have enough technical knowledge to create a good technical foundation and understand all the stuff that AI is tossing at, then I can sometimes say, happens rarely, but sometimes I need to say, no, I don't want this, make it like that. Mm. Somebody who is like, you know, tier 1 or tier 5, it depends from which side we look, vibe coder, they wouldn't know that. Mm. I've seen people playing 10 minutes and feeling like geniuses, but then after minute 10, oh, but how do you do, it falls apart completely.
Yeah. No, and I would say as one metric that I use for AI competency is like, how often do you say no to the AI? Because that is very important. And, you know, if you're doing thousands of line of code a day, there's no fucking way that you know the ins and outs of it. And I think, you know, and there is this new concept coming out of like code that no one really knows works, but it works. And that, of course, there's a burden to that. But
by the way, I feel we had dark code even before, because 100%. I worked in many companies, and every company had one feature or one part of the app where nobody wanted to go because it was written in spaghetti code 15 years ago. Nobody wanted to touch it.
Those who have tried have just collapsed the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody wants to touch it. It just works. Nobody knows how, but nobody touches it and it just works.
And I think this is a very important point to highlight, that I did not invent slop. And the reason why AI knows and the reason why AI knows slop is because it learned from humans.
Yeah. They went to my GitHub and said, let's learn this.
Yeah, I think the future, we cannot get away from dark code. It's impossible, because the benefits, if you can make it work, then it can go so much further. So I think the future is in really strict evals and rules and linting and making sure that everything checks out. And that's why Script is such a godsend, and Rust and Go, these very strict languages that don't allow you any... us being able to comfortably have monorepos with the back end and front end and everything in one place. And again, that comes down to the context. And I feel, of course, there's still a lot of work in the arena of AI when it comes to text management, because I was looking at reports and it's like, if you have a document that exceeds 32,000 tokens, the hallucination rate on any frontier model goes between 10 and 20%.
That's bad.
Very bad. You need strategies to then cut that down and put it in isolation, but then you lose out on the benefit. But I'm really excited, of course, because now we have next generation models coming out that have been trained on next generation hardware. And it's the kind of logarithmic jump that we have. It's not 10 plus 10, it's 10 times 10. And I think that there's going to be some really exciting evolutions this year ahead. But at the same time, you know, we have war that's cutting access to helium, which is needed for chip fabrication. So many little pieces that all have to align perfectly for progress to progress. And I really don't know what the future will hold, but I feel like even if progress froze to what it is now and we only got, you know, a third of the access to these tools that we have now, my life is still forever changed. I'm super grateful for it.
Sure. Though I'm still hoping to see whatever comes next, because just yesterday Opus
4.7
exactly got released. Been using it today the whole day. It was super fun, works nice. I noticed something, I think like a week ago or something like that. Maybe they were testing in Anthropic, maybe different models or like, I don't know, different stuff. Because I was vibing my Vocabi app. And in that chat, I had such a great session. AI was really smart, would say like, you know, 100 times smarter than usual. And the output I was getting was much better than anything that I've seen before. I was afraid to like shut down the session.
Clear over and over.
I didn't want to even do that. I didn't want to touch it because it was so good. And I was doing that on my Windows machine. Then I restarted the conversation because I don't know, I think my computer restarted or something. And I had one more experience like that, but then it stopped. So I was thinking maybe they ran some like test. Would really love that experience back. I don't know what that was.
You got a split second of mythos.
Maybe I connected to that for a split second.
But that's the thing, the non-deterministic nature of these things, you know, because your chat has its own seed. The context to give it, what is the prompt? Are the stars aligned? Definitely feel it. Like, and that's why I say so much in... Because now I'm being paid by companies to train staff how to use AI, not to get them to like our level, but just like to go from 101 to 201. That is 80% of the benefit for a lot of people are just learning how to prompt better, sculpting context, knowing what tool is best for which, what's the difference between agent and chatbot. These are very fundamental, easy things for us, but for most people, still for probably for the next 5 years, it's going to be like revolutionary. But I now that I'm building my own agency and my own tool that can interview people and talk with people, I think that within the next few years, we're going to see more and more software that will train people into using that software.
That's great.
So,
you need to show me your Calm OS. I didn't have time to check it out, but maybe after this you can...
I think in a few sessions, we'll have it join the podcast. We can interview
it. We should interview your Calm OS.
Well, no, it's Calmo. Calmo is
just
the...
Calmo.
Calm OS is the operating system, the sauce, but Calmo is the our smiley face.
Okay, yeah. Time we bring that mascot here as well. It's also interesting how many founders we have, because now everyone and their mom can make something out of nothing. Before, it was pretty much impossible because you need to really learn front and back end architecture, yada yada. Really a lot of things to pull everything yourself. Mm. Not too many people can actually pull this off. But now AI unlocked everything.
But to an extent, because
to an extent,
I do see a lot of people who are quote unquote founders and they're like tier one vibe coding. It looks like absolute slop. Things default everything.
I am not talking about these people.
Because the thing is, though, that those people, the lovable subscription can get quite far, though it's all hanging together with spaghetti and
barely hanging together, yeah.
Yeah. Personally, I don't know. I'm thinking about it because in a way, I do think it's nice that the floor is lower for people to get going. And we do have a world where even the most successful services don't, you can't really say that they're shining beacons of great UX UI for many of them, with some, like say like Airbnb has put a lot of effort into their UI UX, Linear for professional context as example. I don't want people to suffer because they signed up for a bad coded vibe coding thing that leaked all of their secrets out into the world.
Of course.
But at the same time, I am happy that in order to launch something, you don't need to have full stack experience or a team of people or $1 million of funding. So it's kind of like Brave New World. And I feel that it's all pointing to the fact that trust is going to be one of the biggest and most important factors in the future. We have in EU this kind of age verification app thing. I think like that's a reverberation of things to come, that like identity and validated information and reliable harness of data is going to become one of the most important things in the world when it comes to digital. Because if anyone can fake anything so fast, and anyone can fake anyone's voice, appearance, all of these things, how do we truly trust not only our friends, but let alone then these massive organizations, let alone some new service?
That is absolutely true. People don't sign up for any AI slop app that you find on the internet, please. I think that maybe, you know, if you see purple color, avoid. That's a giveaway.
No, that's my brand color though.
Don't, you need to change it.
I'm stubborn because I've had it since 2015.
It's time to change, I'm sorry. AI took it from you.
But I have a specific shade and I use it very tastefully. Anyone who goes and sees my website, they don't think I made this.
True, sure, you can stick.
But you're right, 100%. I suffer from it, I choose it.
You owned it first, but it's a good...
Generally, 100%, if it's kind of dark vibe and purple with...
Purple gradient.
Rainbow or like, you know, purple to blue.
Yeah, that's
AI old slop. AI.
Yeah, that's AI slop. Be careful using that. Don't sign up. It's probably some spaghetti code that barely holds together and somebody will leak your information next day because they don't have a database. They store everything in text file that's exposed on some server. But anyway, I am really trying to become a founder and earn some money and do some business with my app, Cabby. Everybody download Vocabby. Anyways.
But you've really created something amazing. You can pick any language. You have regional dialects. I really love the new trainer, or like the personal practice coach, and going more into like the rules and the way that you've gamified it. I think that it's really brilliant.
Thank you very much. It means a lot coming from you. I know you have high standards. And you would tell me, honestly, if it's shit. So, thanks. I've been thinking, can I make a business? Because now my boss says, I manifested software, but I cannot manifest business.
Distribution.
Distribution is number one problem, and becomes even harder with all this slop because you're, you know, getting lost in a mess. What I started to do is, I don't want to pay ads because you don't want to become a company that's reliant on paid advertisement. This is the best way to ruin your business forever, because if you cannot get organic users, that means that you will always need to spend bazillion of coins to get users in. That's not very healthy. You shouldn't build your business around that. sure, you should run some ads to boost it a bit, but that should not be core how you do your distribution to be organic. That's the best way to go forward. Of course, it's hard to be organic when you're new. It's hard to be organic without any budget, because how do you even do that? I mean, nobody cracked it perfectly. You can go on Twitter or, I don't know, Substack, whatever platform, and you will see some Silicon Valley dude bro. 10 rules how I earned 30K in one weekend or something. Sure, maybe you got lucky this time. It doesn't work for everybody. It's not repeatable formula. So I'm testing a lot of things and I like it because it's fun. I automated my content creation on different platforms to the point where I actually made a browser that is a content factory. Yes, I'm contributing to the death of internet. Please don't hate me. But my comments are tasteful. They are.
I've seen them. They don't look AI created at all.
And they're so nice to people. They're super nice. Like I'm getting a lot of comments on Reddit. Thank you for saying that. My AI is making world a better place, making some people happy about themselves. I think it's fine. And it's actually genuinely helping with useful advices. I always read what it posts, and those are excellent things. I don't mind. Much better than some toxic dipshit saying, go die or something. That's even bigger slop. I would rather read from AI, good job, just keep going, than toxic shit, to be quite honest. Ideally, it would be human-to-human interaction in a kind way, but we don't live in such a world. I still haven't cracked distribution. So far, what worked the best was one teacher recommending me to her students and posting about Vocabi on her socials. That she gives me tremendous boost. Hundreds of people are coming to my app just because of her. So now it, you know, painted a picture. I can't do it alone. I need to find teachers and convince them to be my ambassador. This is how I get organic growth. So this is what I'm going to do. And then hopefully I will have such a good numbers that somebody will approach me and say, this is amazing. Can I be a part of your venture? Because everyone can beg money from angels and VCs. It's like luck if you get anything, especially if you're a woman. But if you have numbers that tell the story of success, then they will come to you. This is what I'm trying to do.
No, and I think that's... distribution is the hardest thing, and the monetization model and everything. Thankfully, those skills transfer very well from project to project. Not necessarily this distribution solution that popped off for this, so it's going to work for that. But how to approach that problem in the first place, because I think in sight of bringing in teachers and how big of an impact they can have, a very strong action, but not necessarily an obvious one, because you're, let me go to the travel hubs and tell them, hey, you're traveling somewhere, do that. But you have to find the things that themselves carry momentum in a way. For us, we brought, for Vandal, of course, people who are in the music industry, and they help us land the deals. And when we expand to have customer support, I'm definitely making sure that the person we hire for customer support and for our marketing have a music industry background in one shape or another, because the additional benefit you get from, again, in having an enriched context go beyond that single issue that you're trying to tackle in the moment.
Yeah. I would like to wrap up because this is going to be really hard to edit in my new tool that I've upcoded.
100%. No, I think, what do people think? Because we do have a few listeners. We talked a lot about AI before we took the deep dive, but I feel like now we've molted and now we're in the new shape.
Oh, we're different people from last year, I feel. I think 100%. We transformed from designers to makers, to founders, to business people. Yeah, I can see change in both you and myself doing different things with AI. But I'm really happy that we come together once per week, talk about our achievements, show what I did, look what I did. And that helps. You get, I could do this maybe. Oh, I could do that. Oh, this is great. I think that's great because I can't imagine the world where we would meet once per week and like, look at this button I designed. Who fucking cares? I don't care about these pixels anymore. That's the world.
Or it's like it's self-evident that the pixels need to be good.
If you can't do that, you can't call yourself a designer or whatever. If you can, you know, do the of course, reality is a little bit different, but I don't want to also sound snobbish over here. But anyways.
We've all been stuck with bad looking stuff that
sure.
we've wanted to make better, but business realities force
very different. This is why AI is great, because you can then expel all this creative energy into your side business, side project, because it's rare that you will go work for a company with amazing looking working tools. You probably need to work on a lot of legacy stuff, and you're probably not super proud because you're small box and you can't get away from it so easily, if at all. But now with AI, you can make whatever you want and feel proud about your work. Fill that portfolio, have more examples to show to some future
employer.
Job interview, whatever. You don't have to like be sad about that ugly enterprise tool you're designing.
Yeah, or spend 2 weeks trying to figure out how to convert it into a case study.
Example. Yeah, that's crazy.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank
Catch you.
You
on the next one.
Thank you for listening. Bye. Design party.